today we have a selection of wine from Marcel Lapierre. Three wines in total, so the Raisin Bourgeois. Friend speaks French, so she often is responsible for pronouncing all the wines.
She says that, but I like to pronounce things sometimes poorly. Cabernet Franc being one of them.
We have John, Chotta and Romance here. Even though we should be trying Georgian wine, we have a Georgian wine, which we will visit. What's very interesting is there's a line between these wines and I think the wines that John, Chotta and Romaz make. And what I mean by that is a wine that represents the grape variety, the region, and the person making the wine. Who is a better example of that? Marcel Lapierre?
Yeah, for sure.
So I think it will be interesting if we all discuss the wines together. I'd love to know what you guys think of the wine. So we just, whilst having a little bit of a chat together, drank the Raisin Bourgeois, which I guess is almost like a Beaujolais Nouveau in the way that it's a light, fruity, relatively simple style of Gamay.
Kind of entry level, just quaffable, drinkable, affordable. Well, that's good. I think for the, it's hard to find a wine of that quality at that price point, and not that I paid too much attention to prices, but it is, you know, a couple of times I was throwing a big party and needed a lot of bottles.
And
in terms of something that was affordable, but actually still alive and pretty and vibrant, I think it's a great expression, Gamay.
I think those kind of wines are very important in people's houses to have.
And this
is
from a mixture of different plots of land that they have, which is part of the reason it's not, they're not claiming the appellation and they're not trying to do it as a kind of a more important wine. But sometimes, like this year, we crushed our Solicori grapes from Emirati, and we had two different plots that we bought in Sweary.
Solicori is a white grape variety that you find in Western Georgia, Emirati, where Romaz is making wine.
Exactly. And the
other
other one were from Shuagora, from Vani.
And that's another white grape?
No, what I'm saying is we had the same grape from two different vineyards.
Oh, okay, sorry.
And the interesting thing is we filled up two cuvées when we were crushing, and then we had some left over that we couldn't fit into another cuvée, so we just put it in a stainless steel tank. And it was a little bit from the one vineyard and a little bit from the other vineyard. And usually I'm kind of a terroir driven, like the place kind of matters most. But actually these two Solicori together was much more interesting than either of them on their own. It was really beautiful. So
happy accident.
The point is that even though this is a little bit less expensive wine for the Lapierre domain, it doesn't necessarily mean it gives us less aesthetic pleasure.
Because I think that's actually important for people to know that. Yeah. Because a lot of these like Vin de France things, if they don't have the appellation, doesn't mean that they're always lesser. It just means it's a different way of making something. You can still get really good wines from Vin de France. But I think sometimes people get hung up on, like, that's from here, especially with French wine, because people, like, they know the names, but I think,
And in terms of this wine, so it's a, you know, we said it's a lighter, fresher, sort of more fun wine. If you were trying to find a connection to Georgian wine, would there be a connection? Would it remind you of, where would you place this wine? Would you place it or not? Like, any thoughts?
So there's a West Georgian grape called Aladastori.
Yes, which Romaz produces, Dimi, from
Dimi's grape, this grape is very strange, late harvest grape variety, less sugar, like if it has 17 barriques, we are happy.
But that's 17 years, you're going to get about 9% alcohol.
That was my next question, because whenever I've tried that wine, it's got like shockingly low alcohol, and not shockingly in terms of when you drink it, you think, where is the alcohol? But when you see the label, you just... I think it's one of the most, it's the lowest alcohol red wine, if you call it a red wine, that I've ever tasted.
Yeah, that's true. Chang Capito could also be similar from Cartley.
Chang Capito is a strong person.
But this year we did 20% carbonic maceration. You tasted it the other day at the Martellon. We had it there.
Martellon.
Yes, that's very fresh tannins and very young, very live explosion.
Your Chang Capito is... Well, they have something common. I think Chang Capito is more... For me, Aladastori is...
Chang Capito is another Georgian red grape, right?
Yeah. Currently from the center of the country.
I'm in minority.
Okay.
Wet, so they are Chang Capito, Sapira...
Those Eastern Georgians, are they ganging up on you, Romaz? Don't worry.
The girls will protect you.
We are
also like a little, it's nice to have.
And the Ludwig also.
Yeah, no, no, we can hear it.
Against Gwen's dog, Annie's and Jordan's
game. The dog is like creeping around now, so that's what
you. I think he's warming up to you actually, so maybe he'll be on your side. Maybe he knows you're.
Just want him to stop yipping or barking.
So now we're trying the 2015 Morgon from La Payette also. We have two vintages of the same wine, so we have the 15 and the 17, and we're starting with the 15.
This also is from La Pierre.
Yeah, we've got three wines from La Pierre today. Yeah. So the entry level, the Raisin Gaudois, you and then you can sort of crew if you like.
Makes it sound more like in his crew. Like yeah. Like I want to dress up the bottles in tiny jackets. And his crew. More gone of the crew.
Sometimes I think in the life everything is better than it's fresher and younger, but sometimes I think when it's, they are vintage, everything, absolutely everything, the cheese and the wine and the...
Love?
Woman.
Woman. Woman! So you think they can be better younger and older, is that what you're saying?
Or are you saying they're better when they're aged?
Tread carefully, there's two women here.
I know, like Lucas.
And we're getting older every second.
Different
so
tastes.
So yeah, just yeah,
both different tastes.
Agreed.
Yeah, they're great.
Same can be said, actually, maybe not.
Were you going to say same could be said for men?
But
or?
That's not true.
That's not like, true.
Not true, I don't think.
Better younger. Or...
I'm not going to get into it now. But I'm curious, I like we tried the 15 first because I'm curious to see
why we're tasting these wines with you guys and why we thought it was appropriate to try them with you. The recent natural wine movement, wine tradition in Georgia has been preserved.
Marcel Lapierre kind of being part of the inspiration.
I've been to the Lapierre estate and a family or friends of mine. Unfortunately, I didn't ever meet Marcel himself, but I know.
His son.
Widow and his son, yep. Mathieu, and Camille actually did a stage with us in Georgia. Stagiaire. So she was there for a few months, learning about Quevri wine and teaching us about Carboni maceration. I think the wines are super beautiful. Sometimes right now in the natural wine movement, there's a feeling that the funkier, the more wild, the more anarchy there is in the wine, then the better it is. And I think why, you know, sometimes we want to listen to the Sex Pistols and sometimes we want to listen to Bach. You know, it doesn't make one more important than the other.
Right.
But I think this is an example of a wine that anyone, whether they're a natural wine geek or not, they could appreciate the beauty in this wine.
Absolutely.
And it's quite classic and respectful of tradition and humble. I'm not saying that's the only genre of wines I'm interested in, but if I want to introduce natural wine to someone that doesn't have too much experience, then this would be a great wine to show. I think that the beauty here is kind of like undeniable, you know? It's there, it's pure, it's expressive, it's respective of terroir, it's respective of the tradition, and it's been achieved through natural means.
I totally agree with this, and this is what I find very interesting, and my point in this, and this is where I actually see the line between this region, this producer, and Georgian wine actually is, you know, at the time where Beaujolais was really going down, it was not a region that was respected.
Right.
And I mean this not in the way that Georgia was ever disrespected, but it was not heard of. And actually these guys and this particular person, in the same ways I think you guys are actually responsible for regenerating Georgian wine for the outside world and bringing them into Georgia. This is exactly what Marcel Lapierre did for Beaujolais. He was one of a few people that were the movement that made Beaujolais the next fine wine region in France.
I think it'd be safe to say that Marcel and his friends that I mentioned before, people like Fouillard and Breton and Pouzelade, I think that they actually played quite a big role in our lives. Aside from myself, the rest of them are our friends, but not just from a point of view of personal connections. I think that they shook the world of wine up quite a lot, forced people to rethink what wine actually was, and then that kind of opened, people started letting go of preconceptions and archetypes of what kind of genre of wine, if you're a Sauvignon Blanc drinker, they just only want Claret. So they kind of like opened the doors for more possibilities, and then a few years later
when there was a healthy distaste for homogeneity, then the Georgian wines hit the market, which had a story, unique varieties, unique terroir, the ancient traditions using the clay pots and everything. Had it not been for Terry and...
So they set the foundations to actually open that up for you guys.
And Lapierre and Fouillard and these guys, I think that it would have been more difficult for us to make some sort of, carve some sort of niche for our own wines on the market. Mm-hmm. But I mean, to such an extent, there's a... one of my favorite wine shops in Paris doesn't even have a French wine in it.
Amazing. Yeah. Wow.
Le Cave.
Le Cave. Yeah. Between Chateaubriand and Le Dauphine. But that shows how much people have changed. You know, right. That in Paris you can go and you can get some Croatian wine, Greek wine, Georgian wine, and there isn't this, this kind of nationalism in wine anymore.
Which you do see a lot in regions that create wine.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, but fortunately, I think that's dying. It's being seen as very passe.
It does serve a purpose, because I think it's not all negative. I think that when you have wine nationalism in that sense, it does keep a tradition alive. And if you open, there needs to be someone keeping those traditions in that place, keeping it French or keeping it Italian or keeping it Georgian. Because if you open yourself up to everything, you do lose a bit of yourself.
The opposite of that, though, I'm talking about not everyone trying to be the same.
Sure.
But on the contrary, people comfortably celebrating our differences without making critical assessments of one is higher or lower.
Okay,
it's a celebration in diversity, which requires a respect to tradition and an understanding how things happened before. But it also, we're not museum conservationists. If we're not creating something, if our ideas are not new, then the tradition becomes like an exponent in a museum.
And how do the three of you think about that statement and putting that into Georgian culture and Georgian wine
today?
Right.
Marcel Lapierre's a picro.
He said, I'm still thinking about Lapierre.
He's a great person, great man, and he made a big thing for the Beaujolais, for Morgon, for his village. But I don't think the Marcel Lapierre's parents or ancestors have made the wine like this to use the carbonic maceration because it's impossible at the time. So very interesting to taste real Morgon.
Okay, so are you saying that the wines that came before were not made?
Correct me if I'm wrong, Mez. Marcel inherited the vineyards from his father, and he was not happy with the way the wines were being made.
Okay.
And he flipped it on the head and restarted.
But actually,
the same ethos as Jules Chauvet, he actually just said, I don't want to pick these grapes when they're overripe or whatever. And he actually started using the same foundation of Chauvet. So picking grapes that are ripe and clean, working cleanly in the cellar, not adding new oak, not adding massive amounts
of sulfur. Well, I think this fits right into the conversation about tradition versus new. Because then it is like, when do you create a new tradition in a place? Because if it hadn't been done the way he did it before, then there must have been some, blowback or
what is tradition?
Yeah. Right, what is tradition? Is it, as you said earlier, when carbonic we did toast to that period of thought?
Invented then, though. Carbonic maceration has been around for a long time. One technical way to make a natural wine without any additives that was more or less stable and retained its freshness. But if you're crushing in a Palmento in Sicily or in a Sazanichelli in Georgia, then a majority of the berries are going to go in whole.
It's just a natural
part of the procedure, which meant that the fermentation was going to be slower and colder. So it's like cooking a soup over a fire in the forest
versus on your
home range, right? The slower and cooler the soup is made, the more aroma you have, the more integrity of the structure stays intact. And the hotter the soup is, then you're burning out the aroma and killing the structure.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that carbonic maceration is... the only thing I don't like about carbonic maceration was there was a period 5 or 6 years ago where it was like if you wanted to be cool, you made carbonic macerated wines. And for a little while, all different growers from all over France, Italy and Spain that had quite different historical traditions, it was apparently most in France, everyone started doing carbonic maceration, regardless of their soil type or where they were.
They're just like having a go at it.
And some of the results were very beautiful, but then it also felt like another crutch If in natural wine there's a little bit of a spirit of rebellion and anarchy, then it felt like they were creating a new dogma for themselves.
Okay.
And I found going to a lot of renowned wine, metro wine bars, being bored by the similar quality of structure in the wines.
Yeah, it becomes the same as any other art when everyone's having a go at the same thing. You know, I understand the spirit of trying new things also, because that also kind of works. Sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. You hope they scrap it quickly and move back or move on. But yeah, I can see that it would be boring if you go somewhere and you're trying wines from all different regions and suddenly like, oh cool, everything has a little bit of that similar flavor.
It's undeniable that the, you know, Beaujolais was a big part of reminding people of what real wine was, and maybe because Beaujolais had gone so far in the opposite direction, that there was a counterwave.
It needed
the pendulum has to swing back.
I was actually just thinking about pendulums in this.
Yeah, we talked about this before. Yeah. It's like, you know, it's everything we're seeing even today in politics and everything else. But
pendulums, you know, if they've gone very far in one direction, just the nature of it has to go back at least in the opposite direction before it finds its balance.
It gives so much space for something alternative.
Yeah, totally.
When you're only working in extremes. Shota, what do you think? Do you have any comments or thoughts on these wines?
We were talking about age, and I think this is about 26, 27 years old, like a person.
Feels young to you.
Yeah.
Feels the spirit that you were in, right?
Yeah, I think that's like the time when it starts very productive.
I think I'm dead.
No, Romance. We have a bottle of your wine in the fridge, and we're going to prove that that is not the case.
Well, if we look at the last couple of days, he's sleeping a lot more than we are.
Because he knows he's going to become Romance.
He's like, I know what I need to
do. He's like, oh my god, I'm going to have to be able to drink 3 or 4 bottles of wine.
Yeah, I have not comments about carbonic maceration because I don't know lots of about it. Because I think in Georgia we have lots of traditions, but some of them wrong, some of them right. So we have lots of information about wine because every separate person, they have their opinion. And Georgian people mostly, they are very sure with themselves that they think all of them know the wine.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, because I know, I think this is comes from the, it's in the gene, and we have such a long tradition of making wine. We have this feeling that wine is ours.
It's like I was talking to Lexo Sigela Schumid the other day.
I think he's like poking fun at him a little bit.
When
he's translating
to you
without being able to fully translate, but she was already predicting what
happened.
John, could you
translate? Yeah,
he said, can you say something that actually matters?
That's a bit hard.
You could tell he's given a bit of shit there.
He said that, you know, this 8,000 years and the clay pots, we have to just forget all of this. This is not what matters. What matters from us?
Chimtan Parshi. Romu shobta samzareulo shuda mero khino sambo shuba
shota
eta tvikavit
shota was working in a wine bar
ikedan miqhti ro es kai ambovis gamketebeli iqo ra
I realized that shota was a person that was going to do good things
khuda arapishwa sharari are 8000 years tradition da
what does 8000 years have to do with anything
shame to ginda ra me sagi
shi shicho 8000 years ago there wasn't Greeks or Georgians or Armenians in the Neolithic period, and you know there are people running around in animal skins with long hair.
Can eat that, put it somewhere, and after some one week or like this, they taste it. It was fermented. They decide to let do it. It's good.
He said that I think the most peaceful thing in the wine world. As I understand, he's saying that there is any nationality in the winemaking. No, he's saying that we are proud now because we know that 8,000 years ago someone was making the wine in Georgia, but in that time there was not exist a nationality. So it's possibly no one know that, but let's say there were the people who were hunting, who are living in the caves and such things. So no Chilean nationality.
The thing that I understand from what you've said is that, you know, wine is very much a community. And I think what's really nice today is that what we find, particularly with this natural wine movement or this reborn natural wine movement, let's say, is that we're finding that there are people connecting from all different regions over the world and sharing their knowledge. You know, there is no nationality in wine making, that it's something that's shared between all of us today in wine, because people are breaking down borders and they don't care so much about, okay, well, I'm from here, this matters the most, is actually, you know, what can we learn from each other? What do we share with each other? That you have a common knowledge.
I think there's two things here. One side of the spectrum that's quite dangerous is for us all to try to be the same. The other side of the spectrum that's dangerous would be to think that we're better than someone else because we're different. The real way is to be yourself, have your own voice, and preserve some sort of distinction. And the distinction is going to be, in an ideal world, it would be a marriage of the tradition of the place where you're at, together with your own sensibility and feeling and creativity. And I think this is, sometimes there's an American saying that might kind of illustrate this, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yes.
Right? There's something that you want to get rid of, but that doesn't mean
don't getting
rid
of everything. Don't throw out all the good parts,
right? Be able to have the discernment to understand what to keep and what to let go of and what part of the tradition is right for you and where you want to develop and take it to the next level. And I think that, I mean, I agree with Ramaz because I have a couple of restaurants in Tbilisi and a bar that we own together, and I started importing natural wines from around the world, and so there's a lot of foreign wines there. Obviously, a lot of people said, well, why would anyone want French, Spanish, or Italian wine in Georgia? And I said, well,
the same reason that people in France or Italy or Spain want Georgian wine.
I said, one,
to
I want
to share an experience.
I want Georgians to understand what kind of context their wine fits into, a greater. And the other thing is, I was never interested in making a restaurant to promote Georgian wine.
Sure.
The farmer that's in the Rhone that's working with the same ethos as us is our brother. And the big winery down the street from us in Georgia that's using chemicals that are debilitating the land and hurtful for people and making wines predictable, we don't have anything in common with.
Sure.
So more than geography and nationality, it's the spirit and ethos that kind of has built this natural wine community. But at the same time, it doesn't mean that Shota or I shouldn't be respectful or try to understand why wine was made a certain way in our village and with that variety. At least we have to understand this, and then we take from that what we need and want.
But I was thinking back to what you said at the very beginning when you were saying about each wine and why you like wine in particular. And one of the reasons I love wine is that it's a photograph of a time and a place and a moment in a history.
Photograph or even a window.
Window, sure. That you
like
can look into
a window
it, right.
Into that space.
So what I like about it is the conversation that you get around a glass of wine can be about where it's from, the moment in time it was made, the cultural repercussions of like how it was made in that moment, especially when things are vintage, that you can revisit a place and taste what they were tasting, that you get to experience it even through time, what the people were drinking in that moment, which is means it's conversation.
Yeah, of course.
It's a conversation that goes beyond a culture and a whatever. It's a shared experience.
It's super important. I mean,
not only with people drinking.
We have a lot of friends in France now that are making wine in Georgian Clevery, and we started making, for instance, Pet Knots that was almost non-existent in Georgia just a few years ago. So there's been a big exchange. Also, like the region that Ramaz is from, it's the wines are on the lighter, fresher, brighter acidity side. And in Soviet times, 90% of the wine came to the eastern part of the country, and most Georgians, even in the West, they think that the best wine is coming from the east. And when the French started coming, a lot of Ajarians and Gurians, I know, are buying the grapes in the east and making the wine there. I'm not saying you. I think it's because they were brainwashed in Soviet times that was the industry, was in the east. And when a lot of guests from France started coming and they really respected the brightest.
We are like maybe the 2 hours here.
Not quite. I know, okay, time is ticking slowly for hours, you.
One hour, oh, half.
Yeah. He's like, God, we've been here for hours, it's a... girls. Can we finish already?
It's always coming questions from you. So maybe okay. I have one question as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'd love to hear your questions. Please ask us.
Why three wines? Why all red and all Morgon?
So, actually, one of the things that works really well about this podcast is that it is a little bit fly by the seat of our pants. And sometimes it means quick thinking. And lucky for us, we have Emily that can think quickly and make connections between things that maybe other people wouldn't make. So when we were discussing what we had on hand, we discussed these wines, and she found a connection immediately between this producer and what you guys do at home. And that became instantly what we were going to drink tonight, because what's more obvious than drinking your wines with the winemakers? Actually, for us, it's more interesting to have you describe what you think of something else, where you think things have been, where they're going, to look at someone else's history to connect it to yours. And I think it works with the conversation we've had tonight has been a lot about what we can share from things, where our points are, what unites us, and that sometimes traditions aren't only ours.
I'm so glad she answered that, because she can answer.
I think he was just asking for another bottle.
Thank you very much. Yeah, beautiful.
Yeah, I'm sure you were thinking, why is there only three and not four or five? But we only had three. I think it's much more interesting, maybe for you guys, to try wines that you're not always talking about. So it's not so, it becomes a recipe almost, where you're having to repeat the same things about the same wines all the time. I think it's very interesting to hear from producers, to talk about other producers and wines that share a similar ethos, but actually, would represent, for me, the same part on a wine list, but for many people, not the same part.
Right, how do you make that connection? Yeah. Making connections where someone else might not see a connection.
I want to say one thing. We are humans, and when we plant the wine or something, it's an intervention in
nature.
Into the nature. Arbery bir bunu başıda ragatada ays.
So basically, all kinds of farming is a certain level of intervention.
Of course.
But the question is, how can we make this small intervention without spoiling the balance in nature?
I totally got that. I was like, yeah, that's what you're thinking. Yeah, it's like, if you're going to intervene, do it in the kindest, gentlest way. It's already an intervention. So how do you do it in the sweetest, most, that everyone is happy, that Earth is happy when you're done?
In a respectful way.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's neat to work with them with gentle methods, sometimes low methods.
Shotta is very rude. He put his phone on silent. Pretending that it's not him, but we know it's him because he just pulled it out of his pocket.
It's known rude. Mostly.
He's like, no one ever calls me.
He's right, because the nature, first of all, nature need not our help. One thing we do, we destroy the nature. And Rama's what he said, that's like a very human way. We need to be careful with nature, and we need to care the nature. Less chemicals we use in the soil, mm-hmm. it's our plus, because it means that we care the nature, and we need to keep it for our new generation, for our children.
We all benefit
someone,
from
yeah. Someone like his great-grandfather who planted that vineyard, he was caring about nature. And that's why we have a clean soil in Georgia.
Right,
expecting that you are the caregiver of that plot,
that's
you pass it on.
That's a responsibility of the humans. Mostly the animals never hurt the nature. They never destroy the nature.
And they just don't have the same capability that we do.
Yeah, they get from the nature which is enough for them.
Yeah.
That's how I think.
That's our
responsibility too as a humans. We need to take what we need really to survive and to live physically and with a soul.
Yeah.
And
how it's going to when wolf is going in the sheep's.
When the wolf goes into the sheep herd,
it
eats as much as it wants and breaks the necks of the rest. But a bear doesn't.
Why?
Yeah, but doesn't the wolf sometimes save us from
later?
Come on, I can't translate that. Yeah. Yeah, but you're still in the interview room, Oz. Don't say stuff like that.
Don't change the subject.
I can't say.
Oh my god.
I say the maybe it is a thing that.
Don't say it.
I like it.
The humans are going in the mountains and then in the place where the wolves are living natural and with sheep and it makes disbalance.
People shepherding in the place where the wolves live, for them is a disbalance.
And right. One day wolf is coming and killing like maybe 20 or 100 sheep. Don't eat, just kill. So because go out from my place. So find.
Sure. There is some other metaphor involved.
I mean, I think we could get mad philosophical about this stuff because I think that sometimes. No, this is true. I've just finished a very interesting book about the nature of time. But sometimes the human view of all things is very myopic, and we don't actually completely understand. So the idea of balance for us is very complicated to understand because we see things only in our perspective. Animals understand this innately because they just do what they do and we think about it too much. So we try to manipulate situations, whereas animals are just being all the time.
Yeah.
Well, for the humans, when they think about that and understand what means a balance, it's never changed anything in our life.
Sure.
Yeah, because we know that, but we never change that.
Like, yeah, I mean, humans are stubborn.
Yeah, so
agreed.
All the people are responsible for that, and we also the winemakers. But unfortunately, we know in Georgia winemakers who never do that, and they are on the opposite side.
I think everywhere. But I think this is a very good opportunity
to
maybe wrap up. I think we're going to post a bunch of links on the Instagram page and the Facebook page to each of the wineries so you can have a look and see what they make. I've really enjoyed sharing a bit of Beaujolais. these fellas.
Some of the, you know, we kind of, it was very stream of consciousness, but I think the thread, it was from beginning to end, totally connected to the wine, is a respect and
heartfeltness.
Feeling the what came before, being grateful for it, and at the same time, not having that be a cage for you, but a springboard for creation.
Absolutely love it. So let's cheers
to
that.
John. Cheers. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Super.